Time for another Tacky Talk with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy in this School Vacation Week edition. How are you, Tacky?
Not too bad, Joe. Good to see you. School Vacation Week, and today is Thursdays. We're off of Tacky Tuesdays for a week, and it's a cloudy day today. So I can confirm with you guys on April 18th around 10-ish a.m. I see cloudy skies with a little bit of sprinkles outside my window.
Yes, you look remarkably rested after running the marathon, Tacky. It's amazing.
Am full of Zyrtec still. As some of you may have experienced, I do have a lot of spring pollen challenges, as soon some of you are listening do too, and I've just been popping Zyrtec left and right. So I'm actually feeling better the last couple of days. I have not been sick in the sense I have a cold. It's just the sheer amount of pollen and the sinus headaches and just the raw congestion.
Yeah.
Been going on for like a solid 7+ days, and yesterday was the first day I actually felt like adequate, believe it or not, after this endless amount of Zyrtec, it feels like. And I hope this rain will bring out some of the pollen and wash some stuff off. But I fully anticipate by May my car is going to be covered in green.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes. Just to be clear, you did not run the marathon.
No, I don't do water, and I do marathons. We add to the list of things Tacky doesn't do.
So I guess skydiving is out of the question.
Yeah, heights aren't great either. Although, if I don't know what's going on, we can do the whole A-team scenario. If you know the A-team show, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So we'll leave some of the older folks that may have watched the A-team in the young days. I don't mean the movie. I mean the original series where no one ever gets shot, no much gunfire goes off. So when someone does get shot, it's like the most dramatic moment of the show because like literally no one gets hit with anything. So.
That's right. Even when they were on the firing squad, they didn't
Yeah, it's the nature of any television violence, violence by a bad aim.
That's right. But back to reality here for a moment. What's happening in the political world?
Well, obviously, amendments were due Friday at the State House for the House Ways and Means budget. They released it on Wednesday. And this week is sorting through it. About 1,100, give or take, amendments were filed this time around, which is a little short. We generally get 12 to 1,300, so it's a little later than normal. And Passover is on Monday, so happy Passover. And the budget's been delayed to April 24th. So obviously, it's a longer period of time for advocates to ask us to co-sponsor amendments. We're sorting through the co-sponsoring, and the staff and I will sit down and proceed to prioritize co-sponsoring. I am not going to co-sponsor 500 amendments, folks. It's not going to happen. There is a point where between the work of doing it, because you actually have to go through a whole checklist process on the computer system, identify, find, and check out boxes and wait for other people to approve those co-sponsor requests, which doesn't guarantee I'm going to get an approval because then everyone remembers you have to approve on the other side. Just because, co-sponsor me, the co-sponsor actually has to check off his boxes or her boxes on the request. So don't be surprised if some folks, if you're listening, not just in Quincy, but other parts of the state, that you put a co-sponsor request in and I say I'll do it, and you don't see me the name. There's a responsibility on this amendment sponsor to actually accept both of those. And when it gets a little busy, the phones get a little busier, the advocates come in. Some of these small administrative things do go to the wayside. I'm sorry, but that's just kind of a human thing. And some members only have one staffer, and it can get a little overwhelming. So, obviously, this time period is a chance for folks to catch a deep breath and get ready for a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday budget. And if things could really go bad, we could be there on Saturday.
Okay. Any resolution on the shelter crisis funding?
No, the conference committee continues to go on. Both Ways and Means staff will probably going to be talking even during the House budget process at some level, but the reality is that the House chair will be immersed in the budget process along with the speaker and in the leadership team on how they're going to manage debate and obviously the unruly members that are demanding their amendments.
Stay tuned, as it were. Is there a deadline, Jackie, for the whole process to kind of be wrapped up and finalized, sent to the governor?
Well, technically, the governor, well, technically the debate doesn't have a deadline, but there's a practicality to it because the House has to send its budget under rules within a certain time period to the Senate. In the Senate, Ways and Means budget is generally released the second Wednesday in May. Obviously, the House has no interest in bumping up near the Senate deadline. So we'll get done within the reasonable time period. We do need to have some kind of a budget to the governor by end of fiscal year, which is June 30th for us. The governor can sign or not sign on June 30th. Generally, they ask for a 10-day extension. I'm hoping we don't go deep into July like we did last time, the worldwide resolution. But if revenues numbers change, because May will give us the April numbers and the projections change, you may indeed find yourself maybe going to July as opposed to adding things to the budget we're looking to cut.
Anything in there right now for Quincy that stands out?
Well, obviously the big number is the local aid number, right? The Chapter 70 number plus the unrestricted government aid. Unrestricted government aid is literally what it sounds like. I mean, you give money to the city, you get what they want. So the unrestricted government aid this year is $20,055,396. And the Chapter 70 education money is $46,126,903. So combined, you're looking in the area of just about $80 million, or just under $80 million. So against the city's $40 million budget, the state continues to be, as I like to keep saying, around 20 to 25%, of its base budget. And $23 million plus is not something to sneeze at regarding money they can do whatever you want with. So, a lot of this stuff came up, as part of Prop 2.5. Some of you may remember, where state towns would cap the total revenue generation they can do, not property tax rates. Revenue generation is a difference. And things like local aid are supposed to help address shortfalls of the result of the fact that they can't raise the total budget indefinitely or unlimited in cities and towns. So, you can call it trying to offset property taxes, or you can call it a subsidy associated with Prop 2. Depends on what point of view you're looking at. Overall, as we talked about a little bit last week, we use some of the money from the millionaires tax towards the MBTA. Actually, a lot of money towards the MBTA and regional transportation authorities around the state. Hopefully, that will be helpful for them. The legislature, well, the House in particular, has faith in the general manager, Philip Ng, that he is making progress regarding the myriad of crazy and dangerous maintenance issues along the MBTA and having them addressed. And like, they are still hiring. If you're looking for a T job, they're still looking for folks. So, that's an endorsement from the legislature that, hey, we think you're doing a good job. We want to help you out a bit on your operating costs to help you through this kind of revenue decline still. They're not meaning their pre-COVID numbers or total generation. And obviously, we're not looking for more cuts in services as, we're trying to normalize to a new economy we're in regarding this hybrid sort of in, sort of not in office scenario, particularly the white collar area.
How does the Quincy allocation compare to last year? Do you recall offhand?
I don't recall offhand. It's generally the overall amount is around 3% increase across the board
Okay.
for local aid. Chapter 70 is a formula driven, so it's going to fluctuate every year, ever so slightly or greatly, depending on the scenario of the number of peoples in your number of peoples of your student population. So it is actually Chapter 70 is directly tied to population growth. You have kids system, and potentially kids coming in, the number does adjust. And we are did for, it doesn't affect us, but for communities that have a migrant issue, the state has adjusted separately supplemental funds for communities with migrant issues on their increase of students in the school system. And now that we're starting a new cycle, some of those communities with migrants in the school system will be have the Chapter 70 formula adjusted because it's a payment per pupil. There's a payment per pupil as part of the formula.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it's Chelsea, Lowell, communities like that, Boston, I'm sure.
Yeah, and even places like Concord and Lexington, to be honest, communities that are much better off that very well off, and the community residents can pay much significantly, like great higher property taxes, generally don't get as much local aid. and Chapter 70 money, because they don't have to deal with things such as indigent or low, very low income population, not just low, but very low income population students, which communities that do, receive a little extra money. There's a little adjustment inside the Chapter 70 formulas. So, given that migrants, still seeking jobs and they own nothing, some of these more wealthy communities are for the first time are getting these kind of new adjustments associated with the increased population in the school system.
Right. That's, the economy seems to be chugging along. The unemployment remains low, and inflation is unfortunately still high. So there was talk this week of maybe no interest rate cuts this year.
Yeah, the so-called soft landing or no landing scenario is clearly the conversation of economists. A recession does not look like a conventional recession, like you've seen over again. You're not going to see like 9% unemployment and people's spending just come to a straight halt. I do think consumer spending, I'll say this over again, and it's already signaling, that people are being more discretionary. Yeah, restaurants are doing really good on Friday, Saturday, but I mean, going on Wednesday, it's getting harder and harder. In retail, people are looking for better deals, but I think we'll get a better sense of the inventory levels of electronic goods and clothing, as we get into the spring. But even things like makeup sales, and shoes and other apparel and seems to be tough. But you may see an uptick in things like Home Depot and Lowe's as people, seek to do home improvements versus taking out massive loans of home improvement loans for big projects at home. You may see people, going to Home Depot a little more, doing smaller projects. So, in car sales, I have a hard time seeing car sales, growing very quickly this year. I really do. I mean, unless you absolutely probably have to get a car. I mean, you can see auto parts stores and third party repair shops, should get a steady set of customers this coming cycle. So it's gonna be like this weird combination of things where people are looking to try to, keep the quality of life and get things that they need to get done, while also putting off new big ticket items. And at the same time, we're still in post-COVID experience. People rather travel than buy a new car. It seems to be that around the country. And unfortunately, we still live in a high cost of living state, which means rents are not going to go down. But if you go to some of the moderate and lower medium income states, their rent is actually going down.
Interesting. Yeah, just because they have more supply than we do, I'm sure.
They've had more supply to start with,
Yeah.
and people migrating around for work. So as migration continues, because it's not just a Massachusetts thing, it's a national thing. This is a state where people, you have every right to follow a job. Changes how people go around, and people are being forced to return to office in white collar, slowly but gradually. And we'll see how the workforce responds to it. As we've seen, a lot of layoffs tend to be in the higher end of the economic scale, especially in tech. I think Tesla just announced 10% layoffs globally, as a part of cost cutting measures, as they're having problems competing in China on car sales. So, you're going to see other big tech companies going to start laying off, particularly the higher end of the salary scale, to try to cut back costs. Which, again, these folks are going to start migrating around to other parts of the country for work, if they can't work remotely. And that's why the unemployment numbers don't expect to tick up immensely, because they're going to be on unemployment, but maybe find a job in 6 weeks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't register. It's not long enough to show up in the statistics.
Yeah, you're going to see this in politics a lot this summertime, particularly the presidential campaign. They're going to snapshot on things like unemployment numbers from both sides as they attack each other. And you got to look at this stuff as holistic issues. As I like to say, in my job, especially as a chairman, you kind of have to look at a statewide picture, not just isolated. So obviously, you guys all know I look at the small picture of my own city, little data sets, personal experience, stories from folks. But also, I do have to listen to folks on a statewide level, and I do see things in kind of like this big picture on top of the little picture of our world at home in Quincy. And and also the national picture, because some of the data only comes out nationally, but you can't look at it as like 1 month. You have to look at things in a 6 to 9 month, a 10 or a 12 month period to get kind of a big picture of what the pattern is and where things are happening, whether it be, state level or national level or the globalization level. And you know, we talk about this a lot, though. This is a small world, and we've been globalized since the days of the revolution. People forget, you know, U.S. has always one of been the biggest raw materials exporters in the history of the world. I mean, everything from cotton to gold, you know, we export.
I think the
So,
biggest, I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, as a result, I mean, you know, the U.S. has always been a linchpin of the global economy, you know, regarding that materials. And we've been the largest economy in the world since the late 19th century. There's another thing no one realizes. We've been the largest GDP for well over 100 years. And we are the linchpin of globalization. So, you know, people always talk about Fortress America and this and that. It's never been Fortress America, folks. We've always been a major exporter. We've always been as because of revenue increases as our economy keeps changing, we become a major importer because people at home want to buy stuff from other places, and it's not always cheap goods. You know, people like their fancy European cars if you're a certain income bracket. You know, people also like designer clothes. You don't not everyone has you know, a Gucci, but some people have like one in a lifetime perhaps, you know, and it's people should be able to buy nice things, right? I mean, you afford the money, you got the money to afford it, and you know, you are able to, you know, work for it. You know, a lot of import stuff is nice for folks, right? So I think there's kind of this misconception that we only ship in solely cheap goods. It's not true. We do ship everything in the planet here, everything from food products, such as tropical fruits, for example, you know, all the way to, you know, luxury brand items. And we're a major consumer.
Yeah, the biggest unknown, I think, is what's going on, geopolitically right now in the Middle East and what's going to happen there.
Yeah, you all heard middle last week that Iran was definitely going to retaliate against Israel for an Israeli attack in Syria, an Iranian embassy where they killed some Revolutionary Guard generals, which is the Iran army, attacking an embassy. It's basically attacking the soil of a sovereign nation because they have sovereignty over that patch of land as an embassy as part of diplomatic relations. So, you know, Iran considered attack on the soil. Israel is clearly ramping it up and killing threats, literally killing threats they see as, you know, perceiving as not perceived that they know are the ones instigating violence against Israel. Part of it is Iran does a lot of proxies. You guys heard the Houthis are shooting ships at Red Sea still. Iran actually boarded, I believe, a Bangladesh flag ship, cargo ship. And also, southern Lebanon, Hezbollah's weapons are pretty much Iranian bought and sold or given to Hezbollah. One of the untold stories in the media is that Hezbollah has not stopped shooting missiles at Israel. They're still just going at it, and their Israelis have been flying sorties into southern Lebanon, taking out missile sites on a regular basis since October 7th. So they're fighting not just in Gaza, which actually pulled out a lot of battalions right now. They're also fighting Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, which has always been a regular, like almost routine, missile attacks on Israel, which they now have to definitely retaliate. And then you got this 300 plus drone plus cruise missiles plus, you know, as high atmosphere missiles hitting. We're trying to hit Israel, and you know, of that amount, the approximate number is 99% shot down, give or take. And but they do confirm seven missile hits on one of the air bases. You know, one person was injured, but no deaths. And you heard that the, you know, Royal Air Force, the British as well as the U.S. Air Force, was there shooting down drones and missiles as part of the Iron Dome with the missile defense system. Again, U.S. missile defense systems are still the best on the planet. And in the rough cost is $1 billion to Israeli government just to fend off 300 plus, you know, flying objects to, you know, to bomb their city. It also came from old locations. It just didn't come from Iran. It also came from Lebanon. It also came from Yemen. So they had Iran had somehow also violated the airspace of both Jordan and Saudi Arabia. So when you talk about regional conflict, you know, no one wants missiles flying over your home, you know, and it's not a plane. Missiles aren't the same as planes regarding airspace violations, but it doesn't give you a lot of comfort as the country, you know, in between the airspace. And Jordan was shooting down missiles also on the way through, because it's Jordan's best interest that one dozen, two dozen, or a dozen doesn't actually make it all the way to Israel, and it drops on Lebanon. Yeah, not Lebanon, I'm sorry, Jordan. Jordan is the immediately east of Israel. So I'm sorry about that. So Jordan really didn't want that. And you got Iraq next to Jordan, which is next to Iran, which also is a sovereign country, which also is very unhappy with the whole situation. So while Iran would like to attack Israel, you do have a lot of stuff in the middle. And they have no interest in being dragged into a larger conflict. But if either side wants to go at each other in a ground war or even an air war, you're going to have to violate a lot of sovereign airspace.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous trend. It's dangerous waters to certainly to go down.
Oh yeah, it's going to be picking sides, right? I mean, it's not necessarily just picking, who you think is going to win. It's also protecting your sovereign territory. So,
Right.
I mean, the media doesn't do a really great job with this. I mean, you see some, great news analysts from military generals when they actually yank up the map and you see like, oh, yeah, this is not just necessarily a war between two countries. This could be a war between them and like nine countries in the area, because you have to get through point A to point B.
It's how world wars start. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Red Sea stuff has not stopped. I mean, the Houthi continue to shoot missiles. I talked about Iranis have landed a group on a Bangladeshi ship. The U.S. Navy again is, heavily patrolling the area. Again, the missile defense systems from the Mediterranean and Dead Sea proved very effective against the missile and drone attacks from Iran on Israel. Again, I mean, we do have good stuff, but Congress needs to get their act together. You really do. I mean, it may be happening somewhere else, but 70% of global shipping comes through that channel to the Far East. It does it, again, it's quite a globalization. If you can't move stuff in and out there safely, I mean, it affects the entire global supply chain. And it has adverse effects. Now, what's curious is that some of the beneficiaries of this defense by the US and the French and the Germans and the English, is places like China. Right, because they, you guys look at the map, it ain't hard. I mean, the Red Sea is essential for the move of goods, into Europe and vice versa, and also U.S. allied countries like Korea and Japan. So, they obviously, Japan can't leave the shores under the Constitution. It can't leave the territorial waters. But I mean, we're also protecting our allies in Australia and other locations. And on the flip side, I was listening to economists because of the U.S. Movement into the Red Sea. The Somalian pirate activities picked up. So those are, in that Madagascar North range going to the Indian Ocean is very treacherous for ships coming out of Red Sea because of Somali pirates. And Somalia is kind of a really bad country. I mean, the place is really complicated, very impoverished, very socioeconomic in bad shape on like 100 different levels. There's very complicated reasons why they're in such a bad shape. But I mean, local warlords and pirates took over. So the Indian Navy's picked up the slack because it is the Indian Ocean, and they are a naval power in their geographic zone. So other countries are going to have to pick up the slack where the U.S. would protect shipping lanes by basically, no joke, blowing up Somali pirates in the water.
Yeah.
To basically deter Somali pirates from attacking ships, they just shoot them out of the water.
Well.
Because it's again, it's complicated. Somalia is actually a very, very complicated area. So it's a lot going on. Of course, Ukraine, the Russians getting ready for a spring offensive. Ukraine has similar weather pattern as us in the Northeast. So they're in the thaw, so everything's muddy. And then planting season, they have a kind of interesting rotation. So harvest and planting is going to be a serious challenge again with it within this time I suspect a huge Russia offensive, and they're bombing Kharkiv hard to get ready. And then, Myanmar continues to be a problem in the Far East, where you have, Thailand and the ASEAN countries, still trying to figure out how to deal with essentially what's going on, genocide going on in there as they're killing ethnic minorities and their own citizens in this civil war, where it looks like government is actually on their heels. And it's gone and really bad. So we got a military government in the heels. Scorched earth is the next choice. They don't. He's
Yeah.
going to kill everybody.
It's a very small world when you start to look at it.
Oh, it absolutely is, right? And then you see down south, I mean, people don't want to talk to Venezuela because Venezuela is going to looking to invade Ghana because Ghana has the next biggest, largest oil patch that's off the coastline. And there's like swath of land that, is considered part of that territorial water. So, the big boy in South America is Brazil. And Brazil is trying to withdraw itself from being the enforcer nation in South America. But I mean, you're still the biggest military power, economic power in South America. And, the other choice, you got to go find the Europeans and Americans to come save you, which both, Europe and US have made it clear to Venezuela, don't invade your neighbor. And so you got a lot of things going on at a global level. And, peace and stability. It's not just diplomacy, but sometimes reminding folks who has the biggest gun.
Do these
But
issues?
it's true.
What's that, Jackie?
Oh, it's sad but true. Sometimes I have to show you have the best firepower. I mean, it's sad but true.
I'm just curious, do these issues ever come up on Beacon Hill in terms of private discussion or even public resolutions? Anything ever get introduced like that on the floor?
No, we actually don't talk about too much about global politics in the sense of caucuses or anything like that. Unless there's the impact discussion of things like supply chain. Obviously, in COVID, we never stopped talking about global politics during COVID. But we also get invitations from various groups in DC to come on Zoom meetings on forums. Did more of those during COVID than I do now because I'm kind of way too busy to watch these forums. And not always every legislator gets a conversation with different constituents. Again, I do enjoy my lunch and dinners with various foreign nations to see what's going on there and how we perceive them and how they perceive us. But no, I mean, this is kind of stuff that I kind of know on the side. I don't claim to be an expert. I just read the news like everyone else.
Just I was just curious. I know some folks are calling for local selectmen and school committees and city councils to issue resolutions on a lot of these issues, and it seems that the local elected officials are leery of that. They want to stick true to their cause, right? What their constituents elected them to do.
Oh, some of the constituents don't understand that having a resolution passed by city council means absolutely nothing in the big picture. That makes you feel good. Looks like you did something on your meeting minutes or your journals, but I mean, folks, it literally does nothing. And frankly, it doesn't matter. So, in our world, we don't get involved in that. We actually have a policy in the House Rules Committee that prohibits political statements as resolutions. We do things like celebrating someone's 100th birthday every so often. We do recognize certain achievements in history. We condemn violence, which you've done a few times regarding violent attacks and racism. We reaffirm our relationships with foreign nations regarding our memories of understanding. We celebrate like your 100th anniversary. I'm sorry, this is Massachusetts. 200, 300, 400 anniversary as a founding of municipality. But, we are do not do foreign relations or political statements through resolution in the House. We have a strict rule against that.
Okay, yeah, it's good to know. I wasn't sure about that, so that's interesting. What's going on in the district these days here in Quincy? I know the C Street project is well underway now.
I was driving through C Street yesterday. My good friend Mindy Dom, the representative of Amherst, decided to come down for a visit. We had some fun chats and she wanted to see the district. So I drove around the city. You all may know I represent close to 50% of the geography now by land mass, even though I only represent about 40% of the population, 45% of the population. And went through all these historical sites, including, driving down to Nut Island, show her the whole breadth of my district. And yeah, it's C Street project started. Notifications, I think, have already been sent and many months ago. And obviously, they did the easements last summer. So everybody on the street knows about this project because of the easement issues. And, I'm hoping we have good weather. We can be done under 24 months. If it's bad weather, it could be 30 months. It is a weather dependent project. The longer that we can keep the asphalt mills running into the winter because of warm weather. Obviously, construction season is extended for us, but we're getting the prep work, and hopefully this will make C Street safer regarding traffic speeds. We all know that we kind of not know where it is. We're doing 45 before we know it going down C Street. So hopefully this will allow that, as well as, create safe pedestrian passage, as well as bike lanes that will help connect Quincy Center to that end of C Street, both the end of Parma. So yeah, I know it's going forward. I know it's gonna be a lot of inconvenience, and I know it's gonna be a lot of phone calls, and there'll be some night work. But this is 100% state of project on a city road. So $10 million of state money on a city road, that means that city taxpayers, in the bigger picture of city, as part of your property taxes, the same part of your property tax cost, whether it be in debt or cash.
Right. And also, I got your memo on the expanded or updated schedule for the Marina Bay Ferry. That looks like it's going to be more popular this year.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very exciting. I mean, let me, I didn't follow up with you. I should have followed up with you on sending the actual schedule. I did have the MBTA send me the schedule on the times. And I think that's something that's really good for residents to know about. So let me just literally sit here and for you this. Oops, nope, not this one, wrong one. As we're doing this in real time, people. In real time. So
I looked over it, and it's it, they're adding more service from Marina Bay, and they're shortening at least a couple of the trips too. So it's going to be more user friendly.
yeah, it is. It's actually very exciting, to be honest. I mean, you actually have a Logan stop to Boston and from Boston now, and Quincy Marina Bay is part of the stop. So it's Winthrop, Marina Bay, Quincy, Logan Airport, Seaport District, and Aquarium. So there is a circle, and from Boston, it goes from Aquarium, Seaport, Logan, Marina Bay, Winthrop. So you have like Logan, as a midpoint stop. And I don't claim to have, knowledge about like the timing. I think when the brochure comes out, it'll give you a little bit more of a detail,
Yeah,
because
yeah.
that will come out on the website. Bruce, and us, we'll do our best to promote this on social media. But we're looking at 6 a.m. starting Winthrop, then arrives in Marina Bay at 6:50 a.m. To Boston, then to Boston from Logan is 7:10, so Quincy, so it's Winthrop to Quincy, then it goes to Logan, then hits the Seaport by 7:20, the aquarium's front to 7:25. As you all know, I'm afraid of water, but I mean the idea of a 7 8 6:50 a.m. a water shuttle to get to Logan by 7:10, I guess you'd have to take the Logan bus circle to get from place to place. That's really appealing, and it'll go straight from Winthrop, leaving at 6:40 p.m. to Boston. Coming from Boston, the aquarium is the circle. So you go from Winthrop, Quincy, Logan, Seaport, Aquarium, and then you flip around from Aquariums, Seaport, Logan, Marina Bay, Winthrop. So, for example, if you're coming from Logan Airport, you have a 9 a.m. option, 6 p.m. option, and a 7:25 p.m. option to be in Quincy by actually, you do not go to Quincy the 9 a.m. option yet. Yeah, that is only from Aquarium to Logan. But if you get a late afternoon, you could jump in at 6 p.m., be in Quincy by 6:15, or 7:25, you can be in Quincy by 7:45, pending a bit of a weather.
Right.
So the schedule is not quite a full schedule as I would like to see. But depending on your circumstances, I very much strongly suggest that people take a look at the ferry service for commuting. If it meets your schedule, I strongly, strongly encourage people to do it, where you can be, 10, 15, 20 minutes, as opposed to find yourself trapped in the expressway before, anywhere from half hour to a full hour.
Right, yeah, and it's I think it's $6.50 one way. So, and it's even there's a reduced fare option as well for folks who meet the guidelines. So it's pretty affordable too.
And there's no tolls.
Right, that too. Exactly.
So
Not bumper to bumper. It's not wave to wave traffic.
yeah, and you're consuming a lot of gas. Well, not a lot of gas. So, I mean, in my car, for example, I'll get 28 to 32 miles a gallon on the high on the roadways, local, and probably I get 35 to 40 on the highway. It's a very efficient car for a gas car. It was from 5 years ago, actually. But I mean, we got a gallon gas at $3.15. I mean, going one way, doing both ways, it's about 12-ish miles, give or take. And that's a, that's a whole gallon of gas for about 315 in the current rate. Plus you have to pay the tolls. So the price of the tolls plus the gas, it's gonna be about the same as taking the ferry service, and you can do it in 15 minutes.
Yeah, and you don't have to drive. You just sit back and relax.
Yeah, I think the only thing is you gotta make sure the timing, not just 15 minutes, but also when you get off the airport, it's not like the ferry's gonna take the terminal A at the
Oh,
airport.
no, right. Yeah.
You still have to account for, getting your luggage, get on the rotating bus, in the circle. And sometimes you do that. So obviously I would not recommend like a rush, last minute boarding. But you account for that. And yeah, if I get a next time I fly, and depending what time the flight is, I would really, really consider that.
Yeah, you don't have to pay to park your car at the airport. It's there's a benefit all around, sure.
Yeah, you can do an Uber ride there, to
Yep.
Marina Bay, that could be under $10. If you got a friend that drops you off, even better.
Exactly. Yeah. So it starts April 29th, I think, and mbferry.com is the website. So.
Yes, yeah, you can screen that in the bottom of the YouTube one. And I'm sure you have Bruce on and maybe some other folks to talk about it in more detail. But no, it's very exciting. And it runs straight into after Thanksgiving.
Yes, yeah, November 30th, I think, is the last trip. So it's excellent. It's a good, it's a sign of spring.
Exactly. And there's a lot of ridership. It's going to encourage us to do this more.
That's right. That's right. So if there's a need, then we'll meet it.
We absolutely will. And so if people don't use it, then it becomes cost ineffective. We're just wasting money, right? If it is effective, then people want to use it. The investment's going to be made. It's pretty straightforward economics on this. I mean, the days are gone in government where you just put like, three people on it and then, just going to run it in deficit. We can't do that.
No, right, yeah. Seeing as we're talking about events, we should mention the Friends of Wollaston Beach have a big beach cleanup this coming weekend. It's Park Serve Earth Day events, I think.
Oh yeah, Earth Day is April 20th.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, it's they do an annual cleanup. Clean the Greener is going to come up in like the first Saturday in May.
Yep, it's May 4th, I think, yep.
And then is that springtime clean periods? We talked a little early. Home Depots might be a little bit busier as people are going to rearrange the home projects. I probably should look at cleaning my lawn out, and it's a lot of the debris, a lot of wind debris around my house past month. So it's a great the for them to do cleanup. They do it annually, as well as Clean the Greener coming up in a few weeks. But it's also, I tell people, it's always do our part. Don't throw your trash on the ground. Don't throw your cigarette butts on the ground. Take your trash with you and make hopefully make it easier for everyone. And it's unsightly. I do get the wind though. Even if you got trash barrels on Wollaston Beach, wind will pick up something.
Sure. Yeah, that's a different scenario, but don't intentionally throw it away, yeah.
Yeah, and especially plastic,
Yes.
microplastic. Problem in the water, and they float around. They travel the planet. Yeah, amazingly, they do, and they don't degrade properly when the sun hits it. It really becomes nasty. So, we're obviously a water community. Water quality and quality of life is tied to the ocean for us. So, don't leave pet waste in the water. Don't dump stuff in the water because it's going to linger and affects the whole environment. So. What I'm saying is make people's life on Clean the Greener and Wollaston Beach pickup as easy as possible by doing your.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I need to cut a little bit short today, Tacky, but anything else you want to add?
No, I don't have too much to add this week. I mean, Asian American Pacific Islander Commission is having its annual dinner on Saturday. I'll be speaking on the program there. Last Friday, I was in Springfield. I guess people. Have the right people. I do actually go bouncing around the state, and I was discussing about how Asian Americans and how we're kind of left out of the conversation in some ways on fair housing and rent discrimination. And this committee has done some bills that's left my bill committee favorable regarding greater investigations about rent discrimination and continued education for real estate brokers regarding civil rights and housing rights. So. It was actually interesting. It was actually folks from Florida and Michigan and New York, sponsored by the U.S. It's actually a federal agency, the U.S. Equal Opportunity Office, Equal Opportunity Commission. Actually, a Quincy guy runs it. Yeah, well, born in Quincy anyway. So it was, I was the trouble. This actually was kind of funny because I'm actually the tail end of the conference, so it's always tough when you're the last speaker on a 3-day conference at lunch.
Yeah, you really need to make it engaging to keep their attention, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't sit there and read stats. They're pretty much mentally burnt out at this point. So
Yeah.
part of the challenge of public speaking in my world is obviously not speaking to the audience and the topic at hand, but also try to keep it stimulating, interesting, for somewhere up to 45 minutes and taking Q&As. You all discover it. I don't mind Q&A. And I do get stumped every so often, which is fine. That's how you learn. Getting stumped is how you learn. And
Right.
also it was actually create a chance for people to share ideas based on questioning to me that other people also follow up questions or actually had an answer I didn't know anything about because someone else in the room is an expert in this field we discussed about, excuse me, discussing about fair housing challenges. So that was my Friday in Springfield. I got a chance to catch up with my good friend Marcel Carlos Gonzalez, and saw some of the other Western Springfield area reps and senators for a quick hello and hang out. And we love to gossip as well as discuss, what's going on in your local district. So, thank you to Carlos for taking me around and keeping an eye on me, make sure nothing bad happens. There's always like a concern when I leave Quincy. It's like, it's like like a little child that leaves the city and like God knows what's going to happen with Tacky.
Have to start a new series. Where's Tacky?
It is like a recurring theme. I mean, with people, it's like you can't leave them alone too long outside of Quincy. God knows what's going to happen to them. So, but also, not too much else. I wish I had any other better news, but I've been pretty busy. I've had a lot of evening events, had a lot of trying to catch up with friends, and obviously the budget process, and obviously we're in an election cycle, and not just necessarily mine, but hearing from other folks looking for help. They're running for office around, not just in the county, because we're having some county races as we talked in the past, but also statewide. I mean, friends looking for running for rep or senator, depending where they are. Friends I've known for a long time at State House and outside the State House, as well as I'm monitoring some races of existing colleagues and trying to figure out what their odds are. So, it's a little more than just me doing Quincy politics. It's I do live in a slightly bigger picture.
Sure. All right, here's do you want me to do it or you want to do
Well, let's let me give this a go, right? Maybe
it?
I'll remember my own phone numbers today.
Okay.
617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is the number to the office. We are staffed. There is people there. If it's a busy day, obviously you're going to get the automated prompt system. Jerry Purcell is the first name, so wait. You get to my side of the office, room 42 at the State House. Feel free to pop in. We'd love to see folks. At least come say hello. You can see the glorious duct tape on my carpet. I'm not actually kidding about that. That is a real thing. You can email me at tackey.chan@mahouse.gov, tackey.chan@mahouse.gov. Obviously, right now, as I was emailing you, another dozen emails came in regarding advocates and constituents about budget amendments. So it's going to be a very hot and heavy email cycle. It'll slow down after the budget stops, but it's going to be hot and heavy. And then, since I'm room 42 at the State House, zip code 02133. And we have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, and we have at Tacky Chan on X. Obviously, we're here at QATV, and we have Tacky Chan at ORG for some informational stuff, and MALegislature.gov. So you can watch the budget debate next week starting on Wednesday, and you can actually track the budget amendments as things happen. And we can discuss next week about how that works in more detail. And I think, depending what day, either going to get me right before the budget or right in the middle of the budget for our next talk.
All right, sounds good. And we'll get a tacky allergy update at the same time.
Yeah, you can all sound my sniffles are clearly still there, the congestion, even though I'm inside my own house. Those who know I live in Black's Creek Marsh, I mean, this is like pollen central.
Exactly. Pretty soon it'll be Mosquito Central.
Yeah, the ones who can't see me, you can see exactly. You don't need to know what my face looks like after that sound. You all know
That's
it.
right. That's right. Thanks a lot, Tanky.
You all take care.